Hello, it's me, Susan, with another edition of The Big Middle. I have given, over the course of 3 years of doing this podcast, the concept of retirement shortest shrift. I mean, is retirement, what does it even mean these days in 2022? We don't retire. We shift gears. We make transitions. Many of us need to keep working. All of us need to keep growing our minds and figuring out how to soothe our souls and maybe give back. Figure out a way to do something that is of more wider value to others than to just ourselves. I've got two fascinating guests alongside to talk transitions, gerontologist, researcher, and author Deborah Gale, and journalist and author Richard Eisenberg. Newly unretired is how he describes himself these days, and he's going to tell us all about that. Big welcome to both of you. Hello.
Hi, Susan.
Hi, Susan.
Is this the highlight of your day so far? What have you been up to today, Deborah?
It's a bank holiday. Everybody's had the day off here. So we actually had people over for lunch, so it was very nice, except the weather did not perk up. It's absolutely appalling, as a typical Maybank holiday is.
Yeah, I was optimistic enough to hang some laundry on the line after I got home from teaching, and I just kept looking. I thought, oh, it's going to be wet, and that's no good. What about you, Rich? What did you get up to today?
This morning, I went to the American Society of Journalists and Authors Conference, which happens once a year, except for the last 2 years when it didn't, because I always like to learn about what it's like to be a freelance writer and editor and pick up some tips. So I did that. Sometimes I'm on panels, but this year I was a listener. And then I came back and I thought I was going to be doing a Zoom call for a program that I'm involved with NYU in New York City, but the people didn't show up. So I'm hoping to reschedule that. And now this is the highlight of my day.
Oh, fantastic. Good. That's what we like to hear. So I asked you to prepare little biographies because, Rich, you are well known in the longevity and aging space as the former managing editor of the amazing Next Avenue. Tell us more about your career and why you call yourself unretired now and how old you are.
Sure. Well, I'll start with my age. I'm 65, and I've been a journalist since I graduated from journalism school in 1978. I worked at Money Magazine for many years. I started as a fact checker, and when I left, I was the executive editor. I worked at Yahoo for about a year and a half as the front page finance editor. I worked at Good Housekeeping. And then, as you say, I was at Next Avenue, which is a site I helped launch in 2011. It's a site from public broadcasting for people in their 50s and 60s. And just as you say, in January of this year, I became unretired, which is my word. Some people say semi-retired, but it's the way I'm defining my life, which is to say, well, I'll tell you a little bit more about that later on.
Yeah, because you've even got a column, don't you? Market Watch. You call it The View from Unretirement.
That's right.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
You're doing loads of things, and I'm sure you'll drip feed the details of that as we go. What about you, Deborah?
Well, so I kind of put my life into three categories. So I grew up in Pennsylvania, and after I finished undergrad, I moved to California and in 1977. So I'm 66. I'm a year older than Rich. I am the senior in this group. And so I moved to California right as Silicon Valley was taking off. And because I had a home economics degree and a social work degree that really wasn't palatable in the Valley, I had rejections like you would not believe. And I landed a job at Memorex as a secretary, which was completely a fluke. And it happened to be in a corporate finance department. And that literally was the gateway to my career as a corporate treasury manager. And I used to do all the foreign exchange and portfolio management at Apple Computer.
Oh, wow.
And that is where I met my husband. And my first part of my life was Pennsylvania. The second part of my life was California. And then my British husband and I got married and we had 5 children in 5 years. Including 2 sets of twins, which catapulted me out of my career into a different career. And when my first 3 went off to university, I returned to university and did a second master's in public policy and aging. And that was my ticket into what I wish I had done my entire life. And I have, this may be my encore career, but it is absolutely the most fascinating, most wonderful time to be working in this area because we are on the cusp of something that has never been experienced before. We have the longest living, the most highly educated, financially astute group of people that have ever walked the human continuum simultaneously. And we have got to take full advantage of that.
It's pretty mind-blowing, isn't it? And the thing is, too, bringing us right up to date now, you are the director of, is it Community for the Age of No Retirement?
Yes, but the Age of No Retirement is the umbrella organization. It's a CIC, Community Interest Company. But 6 months ago, we launched the Purpose Exchange, which is a very, very innovative curriculum-based conveyor belt to turn people's purpose on, switch on their purpose at any age, with the intention of then creating a movement, if you will, of people whose purpose has been switched on to start to figure out what we can do about all of the unmet social needs that everybody is so upset about, everything from poverty to prejudice. And the only way that we can do that is by reorienting the way that people evaluate their work lives and not only be economically driven, but also socially driven, social value driven.
Fantastic. Now, thank you so much, Deborah. I mean, you're both doing such worthy things. Now, Rich, I want to ask you to first comment on my declaration of 3 years ago, looking at the demographic upheaval of now and all of the other factors that go into that pot. Is retirement dead? Would you agree?
I wouldn't call it dead at all. I would say it has been redefined. And people are still trying to understand that and figure it out. And I say that as somebody who, when I went to the conference this morning and I saw somebody who had been a writer for me at Next Avenue, she said to me, "I thought you were retired. That's the shortest retirement since Tom Brady." And I said, "Well, I am retired, but it's in the way I define retirement." And I think a lot of people are struggling with what retirement means. And those of us who understand that it often means doing some work, but not working full time all day, every day. Some people are having trouble understanding that and others understand it perfectly.
But don't you think the language is so muddled and murky that we need a new word for it? And I'm a student of Prof. Andrew Scott. You know, he co-wrote the Longevity Bible, The 100-Year Life. And he said about retirement, you know, we need to learn to recreate as opposed to recreate. And when I think about retirement, it's still, you know, loafing it up on the cruise ship and having that financial freedom. And that's not 2022, is it, Deborah?
Not at all. And I think that's the whole idea of the Age of No Retirement. When it started in 2014, the Age of No Retirement was a notion. And now it's a statement of fact, you know, because it really is a case where people can no longer, a lot of people cannot retire because they can't afford to retire. And the whole idea that you could have a 40-year career and then have a 40-year retirement is just completely, you know, unrealistic today. There is too much uncertainty. And obviously, you know, post-pandemic uncertainty is the price we are all paying for life. But when you're talking about, you know, what you're going to do with this sort of part of life that used to be very clearly defined and now is very nebulous, I think that what we are finding is that the language around retirement and the language, the narrative of retirement has to be disrupted. And we need to blur the firm line of retirement that we used to all just imagine that we would just step into, because it's no longer tenable.
Can I just say one thing, though? I guess when I hear the phrase "no retirement," Deb, to me, and I feel like to a lot of Americans, that suggests the idea of never stopping working full time. And because to them, to Susan's idea, retirement means not working at all. And I feel like we're really in this netherworld where today's retirement for a lot of people is working part-time, but not full-time. When I hear no retirement, I feel like that means like people are going to be working all the time until they drop. And I don't think that's what you mean, right?
It's not at all what we mean. It's that we cannot, that we must not look at this part of life as a cliff edge that you basically drop off of, and then you're no longer of any value to society. So the whole idea is that, what are you going to do purposefully in your non-retirement? Right. You know, and that can be anything from volunteering. It can be late stage entrepreneurship. It can be going back to school. It can be retraining as a cellist. If you always had an interest in music, you know, you've got enough time to basically become a virtuoso if you wanted to. So it's stark language, the Age of No Retirement. And I agree that it does not hit the American ear very comfortably. I don't think it hits anybody's ear very comfortably, but it really is kind of shaking people up and go, listen, you don't want to retire. Who wants to get tired again? You want to do different things, but there's so much more out there.
The financial side of it is what you hear about, but we don't hear about the other important drivers of what all of us need, the sense of purpose, sense of community. In reality, people are not retiring. They're not withdrawing completely. We don't have the golden packages anymore, or very few people have the golden packages. And, you know, they might want to pull up a hammock and read books for a few years. But after that, they need to be doing something with their time, surely.
Well, I think one of the problems a lot of people are facing right now is nobody has told them how to retire. Let's just use the word retire for a moment today. And so, for example, I wrote a piece for MarketWatch in my column about how I feel financial advisors could be doing a lot more to help their clients prepare for retirement beyond just investing and saving money for the future, which is how most of them view retirement planning. And that's only a part of retirement planning. I think there's about three quarters of retirement planning that they don't do anything to help with. And so that means that people need to find retirement coaches or life coaches or figure it out on their own. I feel like financial advisors would be a good place to start. Maybe they could connect with other people, people like Deb and her group. But I feel like a lot of people could use a little help.
Yeah, I agree. And the thing is, though, and I'll get to you in a sec, Deborah. I think one of the problems is, you know, when we start to look at retirement, there's this undefined fantasy expectation. We're sort of in a halfway house of the undefined. So everybody thinks, oh, it's all about finances. And it's not about finances, you know, and especially in 2022 with all the precarity post-pandemic, even before, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, a lot of people are stuck on the bottom of the pyramid. Just the practicalities of survival are to the fore, as opposed to, let's say, being in the privileged position of having sorted yourself out financially, and you can start, you know, going up that pyramid to try to get self-actualized.
And that's part of the problem, too, is that you've got this statistical chasm between the people that do have to worry and the people that don't have to worry. And there is the whole notion of the financial burden of retirement is such a fear-inducing sort of notion that everybody lives kind of with this in this limbo of, oh, my God, am I going to have enough money? Am I going to outlive my money? And with longer living, you know, that is a real problem. You know, and when you read all the statistics about people that don't have enough savings for a rainy day disaster, let alone a cruise holiday somewhere, you know, we have a real disconnect between the realities of people who are going to live for a lot longer and will not be able to afford to live.
And we also, and I think we place the burden on the individual to bootstrap their way into a rosy position of retirement freedom, you know. And for a lot of people, when you look at the last 40 years of the labor market since 2008 and before, with, you know, the crushing of the unions, it's been hand to mouth for a lot of people in this country, in the UK and in the United States. You know, just go to San Francisco or LA and look at the carpet of homeless.
Absolutely.
It's tragic. Go ahead, Richard.
Well, I was just going to say, I think whether you have enough money whether you think you have enough money or whether you feel like you need more, I think we all need to figure out, well, how are we going to spend our days and how are we going to find meaning and purpose in this part of life? And I love what Deb is doing to help people figure that out. But I think that's a big problem for a lot of people. I know when I started my unretirement in January, my biggest question, putting finances aside, was what am I going to do with my days? And I looked at a calendar and it started blank. And that was a little scary. And I've been filling it up. I'm trying to figure out how full it should be each day. And am I filling it up in the right, with the right quadrants? You know, I'm trying to give myself some time to volunteer and to mentor, some time to work, some time to read, a little time to travel, spend time with my wife, see our kids when we can. There's a lot to juggle and it's a little hard to know what's right.
Are you finding
why you need to come to the Purpose Exchange?
Right. You're right. I will.
But the thing is, for you, Rich, it's not like you're recreating your traditional habitat, but you're not trying to do something massively different. You're trying to gain more freedom over your schedule, right? You're not having not that you were ever punching a clock.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I am doing freelance writing and editing, which is pretty similar to the kind of work I did before, although the column is a new one for me. But I've also started to take a class in voiceover work to see what that's all about, because I might want to do a little of that on the side. I'm still podcasting, and I thought that might be interesting to learn about voiceover. I thought I was going to take an acting class, and then it turned out they couldn't find enough students for it. So I'm not taking that class, but maybe I will at some point. So you're right. I'm doing some things I've done before, but I'm trying to do some things I've never done before. And I'm trying to do more of things that I used to do, but haven't done in a while. And then I'm really trying to add volunteering and mentoring, which is something I've done a little over the years, but always wished I had more time to do. And now I feel I do.
So you don't feel overwhelmed by the various buckets that you've created already? You haven't done too much too soon?
I don't think so. My wife might have a different answer. She sometimes wonders if I'm really retired. I think I am. When I go to the places like the conference this morning and they see me there, they think I must not be retired because I'm there. And I say, well, I'm not retired from life, and I'm retiring the way I define it. But a lot of people don't understand that.
You canvass a lot of your members at the Age of No Retirement and the Purpose Exchange. What are you hearing, Deborah? What's the overriding message from the people you speak with?
Well, there is, it's quite fascinating because, there are a lot of people. We are not only talking to people in retirement. We really, our sweet spot right now is people 45 and over, because all our research has shown that about 10 years before people technically are allowed to retire, they already mentally check out. They're already starting to detach a little bit from their from the heavy load that they were doing. If they were really, high performing, they're just kind of, keeping their head keep under the radar a little bit, not putting your hand up for projects as often and whatnot. You start to slowly kind of detach and you're just trying to hang on. But, what we find with people that have now taken the plunge and are technically retired is that they really have not done a personal inventory in terms of what really matters to them. What do they value? What matters most to them? Because they never had time to do that. They've been 40 years at the coalface, keeping food on the table, children educated, whatever, taking care of aging parents. And all of a sudden you have this whole new, this runway ahead of you. And a lot of people don't know what to do with that. So one of the first things that we do is you really have to think about the individual, because until we can have individuals be healthy about the way they're looking at the next whatever phase of their life, because this is a transition, just like any other transition that you've had. But if you don't understand who you are, there's absolutely no idea. You'll have no idea of what you intend to do. And then that intention has to be mobilized. And that's the biggest disconnect. People could go, yeah, okay, I know what I am. I know what I want to do. But then how do you mobilize that into some action? And so we really, our purpose paradigm, if you will, the framework that we work with is, first you get the individual to figure out what makes them tick, what's their mojo. Then you get the intention of what they want to do with all this extra time, where you want to put yourself in those different buckets and whatnot. And then to propel yourself into purposeful action, because that is the most difficult part, is to actually mobilize intention. And that's
this is what I've concluded. Sorry to jump on your last
words
there. No,
that's okay.
But this is what I've concluded as well, because, when you wade into this space, aging, retirement, all of it, there is an explosion of coaches. There are so many coaches out there now, and there are articles and do this and do that, and there's advice overwhelm, tsunami of advice. And you just think, so what? Am I meant to navel gaze for how long? How long
Precisely.
Do I look at and search and do all this? And then there comes the point where, Rich, you took 2 minutes and you were off. Lost under your feet.
No.
You're off going great guns. But what do you both think about that?
Well, I gave it a lot of thought before I took the plunge. I did leave in January. I gave notice in November, but I've been thinking about this for a few years and sort of mentally at least putting some of these blocks in place. Though I do feel that for a lot of us, it's not that different from adolescence. You know, in adolescence, you're thinking, well, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? Or people are asking you that. And now we're at a stage where we're thinking, well, what are we going to do with the rest of our lives and make the most of them? And so I feel like that's the challenge.
You know, Deborah? And that really goes into the whole, you know, all of the theories about life, you know, from adolescence to adulthood, and how we change, how the way that we view the world, everything that we do is a process that takes, you know, you go through stages through your life in the same way that you go through stages of education, career, whatever the linear life course used to be. And what I find so fascinating is all of the researchers that have done that work. You know, if you go back to people like Eric Erickson, I mean, when they were doing that, the people didn't live that long. So all of a sudden you have this cadre of people that is us that are all of a sudden in this transformational space. And I think that that is what is the most exciting thing about this, is that we have this real ability to, Linda Fried calls it generativity. And it is like doing something beyond yourself, which is really what purpose is all about, is using all of the skills, all the talents, all the experience and wisdom that you've accumulated over your entire life, all of your networks, all of your relationships, you know, good, bad, whatever. But you all of a sudden have this core of unique acumen that has never existed before. And that is the generativity that will be, I think, transformational for the world. Maybe that's why we're living longer. Did you ever do any, did you ever look at Robert Keegan's work?
He's didn't. Behavioral... What about you, Rich?
No, I haven't. Tell us about him.
Robert Keegan, I can't even remember when I happened upon him, but I listened to a YouTube thing that just blew my mind, because he talks about, you know, it's like all of the developmental psychologists, you know, they take, you know, adolescents to teenagers to young adults, you know, and then you get to middle age and blah, blah, blah. And to later life, when you're supposed to have this, you know, self-actualization, if you've achieved everything that you were supposed to and built the pyramid, even though Maslow hated that pyramid metaphor. He really hated the pyramid. He didn't like it. He preferred it to be a channel, not a pyramid. But so Keegan basically said that you move from being kind of self-authoring of your life to where you then are able to take all of that, again, experience and everything else that you have accumulated, to be transformational for someone else. So it goes back to what you can do for someone else. And again, we haven't had a significant number of people that have reached this stage of life to be able to do that. And so Keegan maintains that that's why we are living longer, that we are going to be the ones that are going to be able to basically fix everything that is wrong with the world, because it hasn't been fixed. And that in all of your other developmental stages, you can't do that because you're too busy. You're too busy building your own life. You're extremely narcissistic. You're all of the things, you know, the U curve that Laura Carstensen talks about, of happiness, and Arthur Brooks and all of the other psychologists, that you get happier as you get older, the longer you live, and you become much more engaged in trying to do something, you know, to help others in a more, yeah, in a less narcissistic way, I guess.
Yeah. It's like Mark Freeman, who did, you know, the president of the Encore Foundation, encore.org, and you'll be well familiar with him, right, Rich? And he says, you know, biology flows downward and outward, and it's all about finding what you can do that puts your gifts back into the world, not just getting lost in this, you know, striving to find your why.
Yeah, and Mark Friedman's organization, Encore.org, has made an interesting transition itself. Lately, they've been very focused on generation to generation, which is an initiative they have where older people are helping younger people, and sometimes the other way around. And I think that's great. And in fact, some of the volunteering I'm doing is partly with younger people, as well as people who are retired too. Susan, could I mention a couple of other authors that I'd like, that I think maybe your audience might be interested in?
Yeah, absolutely. And are these modern day thought leaders or academic?
Well, there are two modern day writers. One is a fellow named Bruce Feiler, who your audience may know from the book that he wrote about walking the Bible. But he wrote a book fairly recently called Life is in the Transitions. I have it right next to me, and I want to be sure I got the title right. And what he did was he interviewed many people about the transitions in their lives and how they dealt with them. And this being one of them, but we all go through many of them through our lives. And I think that's a great book for those of us who are dealing with transitions or approaching them. The other book I'd like to mention is one that's called Retirement Stepping Stones. It's pretty new, just came out a few months ago by a financial planner named Tony Hixon, H-I-X-O-N. And it's an interesting book that came out of a very sad story. His mother had been a hospice nurse for many years, loved being a hospice nurse, retired, and then spiraled into a terrible depression and ended up taking her own life because he believes it's because she didn't have purpose in this part of her life and she couldn't figure out what to do with herself and she missed having that meaning and purpose. And so he wanted to write a book to help prevent other people from having that experience. And so he's now looking at financial planning much more holistically, and as where the money part is just a small part of it, but the meaning and purpose is a much larger part. And I think the book is a really useful book for those of us who are getting close to retirement or in it, who are looking for how to find meaning and purpose and maybe have a little money saved at the same time.
Oh, fantastic. Well, we'll put those links in the show notes. And the other one, I did an interview a while back with Peter Mangan, who established the Freebird Club. And similar story. I mean, we know the statistics around suicide, 45 through 65. I mean, it's what jumped 50%. This is in the United States in the last 20 years, which is horrific. You know, people are really bewildered and lost. And not only do we need a name for this stage of life, this new stage of life, and I know middle essence and things like that. I mean, I'm calling it the big middle, but that's not really sticking, is it? So middle essence or something, we need to attach that. But Peter Mangan set up the Freebird Club because he watched the almost overnight decline of his father after his mother died. And he now has sort of like an Airbnb situation, but hosts end up engaging with the guests, socialize, going to all the museums. They'd make a real party out of it. And his father has been reborn with this activity.
Yeah, I spoke with Peter. I think I love what he's doing. Deb, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. But and I love, too, that these are intergenerational experiences, because I think that that's one of the other disconnects that we have right now with respect to retirement, is that we, you know, too often, you know, we shuttle older people, you know, off into, you know, for lack of a better word, ghettos, you know, and so you basically remove them from the typical social fabric. And to be honest, you know, like, you know, again, back to the research we did at the Age of No Retirement, most people of all ages want to be with other people from different generations. There is so much more that we have in common that we just take for granted. I mean, it's, and so we need to create these opportunities for intergenerational connections, which aren't always so easy to form today because of the breakup of the nuclear family, that the fact that we have, you know, so many people have moved from their hometowns and, you know, have created their lives in different places. And now you've got this reverse migration going on in the United States. I'm not so sure that I've seen the same phenomenon in England, where people that left post-university and went to the major metropolitan areas in the U.S. are now upping stakes and moving back to their hometowns in the Midwest or on the East Coast if they were in the on the West Coast, because they want the familiarity and they want to, you know, kind of return to their roots, and they're rejuvenating their old stomping grounds, if you will. And they're also reconnecting with, you know, with family and with the younger people. And so I think that that is so healthy, and we need to create opportunities to allow people to have more intergenerational connections, because that's how we thrive. It's not about young and old. It's about all of us. It's about the connection, the human connection.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And one other thing, I don't notice it so much, but I do have to be quite deliberate about bringing younger people into my life, you know, but you are bumping into them all the time. Unlike some, you know, in small town America, if it's not your hometown, you know, you could be just in a cul-de-sac in your house in the suburbs and not engaging at all with anyone beyond the postman.
You really do have to make an effort, I think, to remain intergenerational, because as Deb says, there are so many efforts to keep us apart. And I feel like we need to work at it. I love spending time with my sons who are in their 30s and their wives and people their own age. And I like to think that sometimes they'd like to spend time with me too.
Absolutely. And you've got quite a brood, don't you, Deb? So you do you have a lot of grandkids now?
But we have, nobody's married. You know, they range in age from 26 to 31. And so they're, but nobody's married. Three are in relationships. Two are still footloose and fancy free. And they, and so like I get a lot of intergenerational feedback. And what I love though, is that, you know, they don't want to talk to me, but their friends like to talk to me. And, cause they've heard all my advice. My kids have heard everything, you know, and so I get to sprinkle this to other of their friends. One of the things that used to bug my kids so much is that I would bombard them with articles that I saw, or, you know, little sound bites that I would see, or a little snippet of something. And they would go, okay, you've got to stop this, because we're getting 55 emails from you. We're getting text messages. We're getting, you know, Instagram notices and everything. And so now I curate one time a week. I do an email and it's called Debits.
Debits Family Newsletter. I love it. Debits. I really like that. What about you, Rich? Any final thoughts before we wrap up here?
Well, I love what Deb's doing. I think I have to do something like that. I do try to share a lot of things that I'm reading and seeing with my kids, and they share it right back at me. And so we're learning from each other. I think the most important thing is to stay engaged and learn new things and try new things and not to be afraid to fail. You know, we've spent so much of our lives following orders and doing what we were told we needed to do and being so afraid of making a mistake or doing something wrong. This is the time of life where it's okay to try something out, and if it doesn't work out, to say, well, I tried and I'll move on to something else, or I'm going to keep trying and working at it. And that's kind of fun and a little scary.
A little scary. Well, you seem to be handling it really well. And I guess, Deb, you're just going to keep on trucking, right? You're going to continue with the Purpose Exchange. You've just set that up, the Age of No Retirement. Any last thoughts from you? A best piece of advice for how to live the second half of your life?
I think that the most important thing is to stop being afraid, because the depletion in confidence robs you of all of the richness that you have that is still ahead of you. And you have to start thinking, do it now, because there's no more later.
Go past the risk and away you go. Thank you so much, both of you. It was really a lively conversation. And I learned a lot, as usual. Really enjoyed it, and I hope you did too.
Loved it.
Thanks.
Bye-bye, Deborah Gale, Rich Eisenberg. I'm off to France for a couple of weeks, but back with you after that. Ciao for now. Bye-bye.